All right, so let's dive into this pop culture thing that's been like kicking shell for like what, over 40 years?
Yeah.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, yeah.
It's fascinating how they've managed to like stay relevant for so long, you
Right.
know?
Right.
Is it nostalgia? Is it the pizza? I don't know. We're about to find out.
What's interesting is how TMNT, much like the subject of our deep dive today,
Okay.
Daniel Bates,
Okay.
has constantly reinvented itself.
Okay.
We've got his analysis of the turtles' evolution,
Yeah.
and it's fascinating to see him tackle this like pop culture icon after exploring everything from true crime to like literary
Yeah,
analysis.
you're right. It's like Bates himself is a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle of creativity, constantly mutating and adapting
Yeah.
to different genres.
Yeah.
So our mission today is to determine which version of TMNT is like the most definitive, because you know, there are a lot of them.
There are a lot of them.
We've got the movies, we've got the cartoons, we've got the comic books.
We'll also debate which turtle reigns supreme. Because let's face it, everyone has a favorite.
Right.
And we'll explore Shredder's story from an angle I bet you haven't considered before.
Ooh, this is where it gets interesting. Bates always has a way of turning things on their head. I'm ready to have my assumptions challenged, but first,
Yeah.
let's trace the evolution of TMNT, because it's gone through some serious transformations over the years.
Absolutely. You've got the original 1984 comics,
Right.
which were dark, gritty, and violent, almost a world away from the pizza-loving goofballs we know today.
Yeah, it's true. I actually revisited those early comics in preparation for this deep dive,
Okay.
and I was struck by how different the tone was. It was like reading a totally different franchise.
Bates argues that this darkness was a reflection of the time.
Okay.
The comics were heavily influenced by gritty films like Taxi Driver and Escape from New York.
Oh, wow.
There's a certain cynicism and disillusionment in the air. It
Right.
makes you wonder if the Turtles would have achieved mainstream success if they had stayed in that gritty lane.
That's a great point. And then boom, 1987 rolls around and everything changes. The animated series explodes onto the scene, and suddenly TMNT is a global phenomenon, but
Yeah.
it's a very different kind of TMNT, right?
Exactly. The 1987 cartoon took those core elements, the four brothers, the sewer lair, the ninja skills, and injected them with a heavy dose of humor and kid-friendly energy. It's
Yeah.
what introduced the world to Cowabunga and that iconic theme song.
Yeah, and it's funny because some fans argue that the 1987 cartoon sacrificed depth for mass appeal. But Bates makes a counter-argument. He says that by making the Turtles more palatable for a younger audience, the show actually opened up the world of TMNT to a whole new generation of fans.
Right.
It's kind of like what Bates did with his Peter Pan retelling.
Yeah.
He took a classic story, stripped away the sugary sweetness, and infused it with like darker, more psychological elements.
Yeah.
It alienated some purists, but captivated a new audience. It made people rethink their assumptions about a familiar tale.
Right.
So is Bates saying that the 1987 cartoon, despite its tonal shift, was actually crucial to TMNT's longevity? That's an interesting perspective.
He argues that it's this ability to adapt to appeal to different generations that's kept TMNT relevant for so long.
Okay.
And we see that reflected in the various iterations that followed.
Yeah.
For example, the 90s live action movies found a middle ground, didn't they?
Yeah, they managed to retain some of that darkness from the comics while still being like action-packed and entertaining for a wider audience.
Right. The 1990 film in particular achieved this balance quite effectively. Shredder was genuinely menacing, the stakes felt real,
Yeah.
and there was a depth to Splinter's teachings that resonated with older viewers, but it still had those classic TMNT elements, the camaraderie, the humor, the cool fight scenes.
Yeah, and let's not forget the 2003 and 2012 animated series. Those were huge for bringing back more mature storytelling and complex character arcs.
Absolutely. The 2003 series delved into the turtles' individual struggles and their dynamics as a family. It had a darker, more anime-inspired aesthetic that appealed to a more mature audience. And then the 2012 series came along and did something really interesting. It managed to blend those mature themes with a vibrant, energetic style that was incredibly appealing to younger viewers.
I have to admit, I was skeptical of the 2012 series at first.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be too kid-friendly, but I was blown away by the writing, the animation, the depth of the characters.
Bates makes a compelling point about those two series. He argues that they demonstrate the franchise's ability to appeal to different audiences simultaneously.
Interesting.
There's something for everyone without sacrificing quality or complexity.
Which brings us to the more recent reboots, the Michael Bay films and the rise of the TMNT series.
Yeah.
Those seem to be the most divisive among fans, wouldn't you say?
Definitely.
Yeah.
The Bay films, while visually impressive, were criticized for straying too far from the source material and relying too heavily on CGI spectacle. And Rise of the TMNT, with its experimental animation style and revamped character designs, alienated some longtime fans.
But Bates raises an intriguing question. Is this backlash simply a resistance to change? Or is there a point where reinvention becomes detrimental to a franchise's core identity?
Right.
It's something to consider as we continue this deep dive. It's like with Daniel Bates, he's written in so many different styles, but there's still this unique voice, you know,
Right.
this like sharp wit that shines through no matter what he's writing about.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder, can TMNT pull off that same trick as it continues to evolve?
That's the challenge, isn't it? To stay fresh and exciting while remaining true to the core of what makes TMNT, well, TMNT. And that brings us to the million-dollar question.
Okay.
Which version reigns supreme?
Oh.
Which one is the most definitive TMNT?
Ooh, this is where the real debate begins. I know you've got some strong opinions on this.
Well, based on Bates' analysis and taking into account all the factors we've discussed, the tone, the storytelling, the cultural impact, it's hard to deny the significance of the 1987 animated series.
Okay.
It's the version that catapulted TMNT into the global phenomenon it is today.
I can see that it's the version that introduced so many people to the Turtles,
Yeah.
but for me, it lacks some of the depth and complexity of the later iterations.
You're right, it's definitely lighter in tone, but Bates argues that its simplicity is part of its genius.
Okay.
It's accessible, it's fun, it's memorable. It's the version that sparked 1,000 Halloween costumes and lunchboxes.
Huh.
It's the gateway drug to TMNT, if you will.
Okay, I'll give you that. But let's not forget about the 90s movies. Those had a certain grit and darkness that I think is essential to the TMNT mythos.
The 1990 film especially captured the spirit of the original comics while also being visually stunning and emotionally resonant. It's a great example of how TMNT can balance those darker elements with mainstream appeal.
Yeah, I have to admit, I have a soft spot for those 90s movies. They were a big part of my childhood.
Right.
But if we're talking about definitive versions,
Yeah.
I think the 2003 animated series deserves serious consideration.
Yeah, I agree. It's a contender for sure. The 2003 series went back to the roots of the comics, embracing the darkness and complexity that the 1987 cartoon had toned down.
Yeah.
It also introduced some truly memorable storylines and character arcs.
And it didn't shy away from exploring mature themes.
Yeah.
The turtles faced real loss. They dealt with betrayal. They questioned their purpose. It was a TMNT that wasn't afraid to get dark and introspective.
It's interesting because Bates draws a parallel between the 2003 series and some of his own earlier work.
Oh.
He started out writing gritty crime thrillers, exploring the underbelly of society before branching out into lighter genres. It's like both he and TMNT went through a similar evolution, starting dark and then experimenting with different tones and styles.
Wow, so we've got the lighthearted 1987 cartoon, the balanced 90s movies, the darker and more mature 2003 series. Where does that leave the 2012 series?
The 2012 series is fascinating because it managed to bridge the gap between the lighthearted and the serious. It had a vibrant, energetic style that appealed to a younger audience, but it also dealt with some surprisingly complex themes and character development.
Yeah, it also had those amazing fight sequences.
Oh,
The animation was
yeah.
so fluid and dynamic, it was like watching a comic book come to life.
Bates praises the 2012 series for its innovation. He says it proved that TMNT could evolve visually without losing its heart.
Okay.
It wasn't afraid to experiment with different animation styles, different character designs, different storytelling approaches.
So after all that, is there a definitive answer? Can we crown one version as the ultimate TMNT?
It's a tough call. Each version has its strengths and weaknesses, but I think Bates' analysis points to the 1987 series as the most culturally significant.
Okay.
It's the version that introduced TMNT to the world, the one that spawned countless imitators and inspired a generation of fans. It's the foundation upon which everything else was built.
I can see that it's like the Beatles of TMNT.
Yeah.
But personally, I'm partial to the 2003 series for its depth and maturity.
And that's the beauty of TMNT. There's something for everyone. It's a franchise that's constantly evolving, constantly finding new ways to connect with audiences, just like Daniel Bates.
Yeah.
It's not afraid to take risks, to experiment, to reinvent itself.
Okay, so maybe there's no single definitive TMNT, but there's definitely a definitive debate about which turtle is the best. Because let's be real, everyone has their favorite.
This is where things get really interesting because it's not just about personal preference.
Right.
It's about analyzing each turtle's strengths and weaknesses,
Right.
their role in the team dynamic,
Okay.
and how they embody different aspects of what makes TMNT so compelling.
Okay, let's start with the leader of the pack, Leonardo. the disciplined one, the strategist, the one who always tries to keep his brothers in line.
Bates describes Leonardo as the quintessential hero archetype. He's the moral compass, the voice of reason, the one who always strives to do what's right. He's the glue that holds the team together, the one who keeps them focused on their mission.
But isn't he a little too straight-laced sometimes? Like, where's the fun?
That's the thing about Leonardo. Yeah. He can be perceived as rigid, even inflexible at times.
Yeah.
But Bates argues that his discipline is essential to the team's success.
Okay.
He provides structure, he sets a good example, and he's always willing to put his own needs aside for the good of the group.
Okay, I can see that. But I've always had a soft spot for Raphael.
Yeah.
He's the rebel, the hothead, the one who's always ready to throw down.
Raphael is definitely the wild card.
Right.
He's impulsive, he's quick to anger, and he often clashes with Leonardo's leadership.
Yeah.
But Bates argues that Raphael's rebellious nature is also a source of strength.
Yeah.
He's not afraid to challenge authority, he's fiercely loyal to his brothers, and he's always willing to fight for what he believes in.
Plus, he's got those awesome sets. They're like the coolest ninja weapon ever.
There's no denying Raphael's badassery, but Bates points out that his anger can be a liability. It often clouds his judgment and leads him to make rash decisions. It's a classic case of passion versus reason, and it's something that Raphael constantly struggles with.
So we've got the disciplined leader and the rebellious hothead. What about Donatello, the brains of the operation?
Donatello is the tech whiz, the inventor. The one who's always tinkering with gadgets and coming up with ingenious solutions to problems. He's the embodiment of intellect and innovation. And Bates argues that he represents a growing societal fascination with technology.
It's true. Donatello's the one who's always pushing the boundaries of what's possible. And he's often the one who saves the day with his inventions.
But Bates also points out that Donatello's reliance on technology can be a weakness.
Cool.
He can be overly analytical, he can get lost in his own thoughts, and he can be vulnerable when separated from his gadgets. It's a reminder that even the most brilliant minds need to cultivate other skills and rely on their instincts sometimes.
Which brings us to Michelangelo, the party dude, the jokester, the heart and soul of the team.
Michelangelo is the one who brings levity to even the most dangerous situations. He's always cracking jokes, he's always up for a good time, and he's always there to lift his brother's spirits. Bates describes him as the embodiment of optimism and resilience, and he argues that his role is crucial to the team's overall well-being.
I love how Michelangelo never loses his sense of fun, even when things are tough. He's a reminder that it's okay to laugh, even in the face of danger.
But Bates acknowledges that Michelangelo's immaturity can be a problem.
Right.
He can be irresponsible, he can be easily distracted, and he can sometimes underestimate the gravity of a situation. But that's all part of his charm, isn't it?
It's like Bates himself. He's a serious intellectual, but he never takes himself too seriously. There's always a twinkle in his eye, a sense of playfulness that makes his work so engaging.
Exactly. And that's what makes the Turtles such a dynamic team. They each bring something unique to the table, and their contrasting personalities create a fascinating interplay of strengths and weaknesses.
So after analyzing all four Turtles, have you reached a verdict? Who's the best?
You know, it's impossible to choose just one. They're all essential to the team's success.
Yeah.
They need Leonardo's leadership, Raphael's passion, Donatello's intellect, and Michelangelo's heart.
It's like asking which ingredient is the best in a pizza.
Right.
You need the dough, the sauce, the cheese, and the toppings to create a perfect pie.
That's a great analogy, and it speaks to the brilliance of TMNT.
Yeah.
It's not about individual heroes. It's about the power of teamwork, the importance of embracing different perspectives, and the beauty of finding strength and diversity, just like Daniel Bates's diverse body of work. Each piece is unique and valuable, but it's the collection as a whole that paints the full picture of his creative genius.
I love that. So maybe we can't crown a single best turtle, but we can definitely appreciate how their contrasting personalities make them such a formidable team.
And that brings us to another fascinating aspect of TMNT, the complex and often misunderstood character of Shredder.
Yeah, we usually think of Shredder as like the ultimate bad guy,
right?
The arch nemesis of the Turtles.
Yeah.
But Bates encourages us to see him through a different lens.
It's easy to label Shredder as the villain.
Right.
He's got the menacing armor, the sharp blades, the army of Foot Clan ninjas.
Right.
But Bates reminds us that Shredder, or Orokusaki as he was once known, is a product of his past, a man driven by loss and a thirst for vengeance.
Yeah, that's a perspective I hadn't really considered before. We usually see things from the Turtles' point of view.
Right.
But what about Shredder's side of the story?
Exactly. Bates digs into Shredder's backstory and highlights the tragic events that shaped him. His clan was destroyed, his honor was tarnished, and the woman he loved was caught in the crossfire.
Wow.
These are wounds that run deep.
It makes you wonder, is Shredder's quest for revenge really that different from the turtles' own desire for justice?
Right.
After all, they were also victims of tragedy. You know, their father figure, Splinter, was mutated and their human father was killed.
It's a fascinating parallel. Both Shredder and the Turtles are driven by a sense of loss, a desire to right wrongs, and a need to protect their family. Bates argues that this shared experience makes their conflict even more compelling. It's not just a battle between good and evil.
It's a clash of ideologies, a
Yeah.
collision of two worlds that are both seeking justice in their own way.
It's like in those classic westerns, you know, where the line between hero and villain is blurred. You can understand the motivations of both sides, even if you don't agree with their methods.
Precisely, and that complexity is what makes Shredder such an intriguing character.
Yeah.
He's not just a one-dimensional villain.
Right.
He's a flawed, multifaceted individual whose actions are driven by pain, anger, and a twisted sense of honor. It's like Bates' exploration of villains in his crime novels. He delves into their psyches, their backstories, and reveals the humanity that lies beneath the surface.
So does Bates believe that Shredder is redeemable? Is there a chance for reconciliation between him and the Turtles?
That's the question that hangs over their entire conflict. Bates doesn't offer a definitive answer, but he suggests that redemption is always possible, even for the most hardened of hearts. It's a theme that runs through much of his work. The idea that even in the darkest of places, there's always a flicker of hope, a potential for change, a chance for forgiveness. It's a powerful message, and it's one that resonates deeply with the enduring appeal of TMNT. We keep coming back to these characters, these stories, because they offer us something more than just mindless entertainment.
Absolutely. TMNT has managed to stay relevant for over four decades because it taps into something universal: the bonds of family, the struggle between good and evil, the power of hope, and the importance of standing up for what you believe in.
And it's constantly evolving, just like Daniel Bates' own creative journey, from gritty crime novels to whimsical children's stories, from hard-hitting legal analysis to philosophical explorations of pop culture. He's constantly pushing boundaries and challenging expectations.
And yet, there's a core essence, a unique voice that runs through all of his work, just like TMNT. He manages to stay true to his roots while constantly evolving and adapting to new landscapes.
Maybe that's the secret to their enduring appeal. They both understand that change is inevitable, but they never lose sight of what makes them special. They're constantly mutating, but they always retain their core DNA.
And that's a valuable lesson for all of us, whether we're artists, writers, or simply navigating the complexities of life. The key is to embrace change while staying true to ourselves, to
Right.
evolve without losing our identity, to mutate without losing our heart.
That's some profound wisdom right there. I think I need to meditate on that for a while, maybe with a slice of pizza in hand.
Perhaps a slice with all the toppings to represent the multifaceted nature of creativity and the enduring appeal of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
You read my mind. But seriously, folks, we've only scratched the surface of TMNT and the work of Daniel Bates. There's a whole universe of ideas waiting to be explored.
So we encourage you to continue the journey, revisit your favorite TMNT iteration, dive into one of Bates' books, and let those creative juices flow.
And remember, whether you're a seasoned fan or a curious newcomer, there's always something new to discover in the ever-evolving world of TMNT.
Until next time, keep those shells shiny and those minds open.
Cowabunga.